for curating the space and leading us in the way you have this morning. And special welcome, Rod, to you and to others. Great to have you with us. Sad occasion, you know. We're not quite sure whether you're a sheep stealer or what in this particular circumstance, but I don't want to pursue that analogy any further. But yeah, great to have you here. Just want to bring some reflections really on this this passage from Mark's Gospel this morning, and for us to consider and mull over and take away. I was out riding with my younger brother yesterday, and at the end of the ride we stopped for a coffee at Taste 20 on Colombo Street near the bottom of Dyers Pass Road. And my young brother parked his bike on the footpath, but out of the way of pedestrians, left plenty of room. And he noticed me lean my bike up against a rubbish bin that was by the gutter, and he said, "Hey, bro," he said, "make sure you don't put that in the way of any cars, eh? They need to park there." He's used to managing people, okay? But so we sat down. My other brother joined us. He's got a bung leg because he fell off his bike. But we sat there having coffee. And while we were having coffee, a woman drove up in a car quite quickly and parked right in the middle of the cycle lane where the yellow lines were. And I could hear him muttering to himself as he observed this. And she got out of a car and rushed towards the coffee shop. And he called out and he said, "Hey, love, don't park there. You're making it dangerous for cyclists." And I felt a little uncomfortable, I've got to say, with this, his directness in the moment. But she paused and she said, "I don't have time to find a park." And he said to her, "Well, you really need to find another park. There's cyclists coming through." And she could see her pausing for a moment. Then she turned and strode back to her car, jumped in and drove off without collecting whatever it was that she was going to from the cafe. I like to think, in his somewhat direct manner, that my young bro was just seeking to ensure that people don't behave in ways that are making life difficult or dangerous for others. And he wasn't simply on an authoritarian trip. His manner gave pretty clear indication that he was simply concerned, both about me not acting like a dick and putting my bike somewhere where someone would where it'd make it difficult for someone to park their car, and for someone who was going to park their car in a way that was going to make it dangerous for others. Loving our neighbour takes different forms. Some of them are only subtle and little, and some of them require courage and speaking out, and some are more subversive or behind the scenes. But there's a call in this text that we've read this morning to love our neighbour as ourselves. And I want to make some observations, first of all, about the co-text, and then against about the immediate text in which this is gifted and offered to us. And the thing I noticed, first of all, in reading this, if you read the whole passage, and in fact, the Luke story of Jesus' life and death and resurrection, is that this question that is brought to Jesus is a question in a hostile environment. Religious leaders stand opposed to and threatened by the presence and the teaching and the way of Jesus in the world. Their position, their power, their wealth accumulation, their prestige and status is under threat because of the way that Jesus is living. In fact, earlier in this same chapter, we read when the chief priests and teachers of the law and elders looked for a way to arrest him, they did so because he had spoken a parable, a story against them. But they were afraid of the crowd, so they left him and went away for a while. Later, they sent some of these religious leaders and Herodians, ramping up the pressure, to try and catch Jesus in his words. So Jesus is living in this hostile environment. And neighbor love appeals often as an idea or an ideal and invites us to engage. But it also evokes resistance, both within us and around us. The call to neighbor love, or to love neighbor as self, threatens hierarchies, it threatens power structures, it threatens wealth and privilege systems, and it threatens our own ego-driven desires in the world. Personally and tribally, we often resist loving neighbor. We hold on to what we have, we hold back from doing good to others, and we hold fast to the objections against neighbor love that we find forming within us. We even dress up our resistance to loving neighbor in religious and spiritual language. We bring God onto our side against neighbor, and we see neighbor love as a loss rather than as a win. We find ourselves in today's world, and some of that has already been alluded to or mentioned this morning, in an environment which is hostile to love of neighbor. Our social circles often, our social media algorithms, the digital echo chambers that we live in harden and reinforce our resistance to neighbor love. They make it difficult. They erode our capacity for giving expression to it in the world. A vast proportion of media and commentary directed through the social media platforms that we find ourselves on seems designed to darken, dehumanize, and demonize our neighbors, to divide us up into competing tribes and push us apart from those that Jesus calls us to love. It fuels the fires of suspicion, resentment, and hatred and turns our neighbors into enemies. C.S. Lewis, writing of neighbor love, and enemy love and forgiveness, offered this reflection. And I found this very challenging. He said, the real test is this. Suppose one reads a story of filthy atrocities. He said in the paper, but we don't do most of our reading in that place today too. But we read it online. And then suppose that something turns up suggesting that the story might not quite be true or not quite as bad as it was made out to be. Is one's first feeling, thank God, even they aren't quite so bad as that? Or is it a feeling of disappointment and even a determination to cling to the first story for the sheer pleasure of thinking your enemies as bad as possible? If it's the second, then it is, I am afraid, he observes, the first step in a process which, if followed to the end, will make us all into devils. You see, one is beginning to wish that black was a little blacker. And if we give that wish its head, later on we will wish to see grey as black and then see white itself as black. And finally, we shall insist on seeing everything, God and our friends and ourselves included, as bad and not able to stop doing it. We shall be fixed forever in a universe of pure hatred. When I read that reflection, I caught sight of some of myself in that response sometimes to stories that I've read. And I recognize, yes, that instinct that I find in myself at times is that second one, to be disappointed that I found out that the story wasn't as bad as maybe I wanted it to be, and the person isn't as black as I wanted them to be, so they could be avoided and they could be contained and they could be dehumanized within my own heart. The environment that we seek to live out this neighbor love is indeed a hostile and a difficult one. We have to find ways of embodying neighbor love, this neighbor love, just as Jesus did, in a setting and in an environment which is working to strip it from us. The other thing I want to observe about this text this morning is simply this. When you listen to it, and all of us have our ears and hearts trained to listen in particular and sometimes peculiar ways, but to this text, what do you hear? What do you hear? For many of us, we hear two commands, love God and love neighbor, in that order. And we've learned in the environments that we've been brought up in, and to even actually create a little hierarchy here. You know, we're loving God, which is the most important thing, and loving neighbor, which is also important, but it's secondarily important. So you may have been brought up in a world of spirituality which has kind of put a lot of weight on the things that supposedly give expression to love for God and less weight on those which give expression to love for neighbour. Or it could have been the other way around. There's kind of a sense where there's two, but they're kind of weighted differently. There are some people here who hear three commands. Love God, love self, which is implied. Love your neighbour as yourself, and love neighbour. And they begin to bring more weight to the implied love, which can get lost in the midst of this, but is so important to human and social well-being. If we fail to love ourselves, then our ability to love the other is seriously impeded. So there's people who see three loves. Some out here, only one. Some people, even within the world of Christian church, collapse neighbor love into love for God. Neighbor love is love for God. Love for God is love for neighbor. They're just different ways of saying the same thing. So what are we hearing when we hear this text? What are we hearing? Well, I want to just bring a slightly different suggestion to the way we might hear this text this morning. And to hear it as Jesus inviting us to inhabit an ecosystem of love. Not requiring, as it were, in some command form, certain things from us, but inviting us into to live within an ecosystem of love. And I hear Jesus saying that neighbor love is part of an ecosystem, an integrated network of critical relationships. And God wants each of us to learn how to live in our own stumbling fashion in that network, that ecosystem. Because when you look closely at this directive from Jesus, you can see that there are at least four interrelated elements here. And love becomes the intentional and empathic response to the other in this context for their well-being and their flourishing. The four elements, as I kind of look at it, that I want to suggest to you as part of this ecosystem of love that we need to learn to inhabit, and that Jesus is inviting us to inhabit, are love from God. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God. We want to jump to the human response, but Jesus, in couching it this way, is saying, if you like, in order to be fueled in our love for self and the other, we need to be filled with the love that comes from the God who created us. Hear, O Israel, position yourself to pay attention, to listen and to absorb the love that God has for you and that is expressed in a multitude of ways within the world that you live in. That's a critical part of this ecosystem. Without it, the ecosystem can't function. If we're absorbing some kind of a sense of who God is, which isn't inhabited and permeated and running through with the love that is present in Jesus, then it's not going to move us into love for self and neighbor. There's a lot of research that's been done about people's images of God and belief systems about God. And time and time and time again, what shows up is this image that we carry along with the experiences that have been imprinted on us and the belief systems that sit around it, if those are ones which have God as, God primarily as a God of justice or a God of wrath or some other form, that inhibits our capacity to give expression to love. So here is this element in this ecosystem of learning to move into a place of encountering this God of love and receiving what this God who calls us beloved is in our world. And then the other elements are the more obvious ones, the love for God. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. And then the love your neighbor as yourself. And these three elements combined with this reception and awareness and attentiveness to the love of God in our world becomes a nurturing ecosystem in which we can have and in which love can grow and foster. These elements all circulate and flow through each other. They enrich and enhance each other. The health of one is dependent on the health of the other. It's not, I'll pick that one. I like that one. That seems a little bit easier, you know. But it's like if we want this system to really function as it needs to in our world and in our own lives, We need to be paying attention to all of them. The health of all is dependent on the health of one, and growth in one helps enhance the growth in all. That's why sometimes there are seasons in your life where maybe you need some therapeutic assistance to learn to love the self that you have grown to hate. And you might need to do some journeying into that space, not while neglecting the other things, not to become self-absorbed, but in order to be freed up so that the rest of the elements in the ecosystem of the love can function. It may be that you're going to have to spend some time reconfiguring your notion and connection with God because it's so distorted and twisted that you don't feel any sense of affectionate connection to the God who lives in your head and has found a way into your heart, which seems destructive rather than life-giving. But all of these require attention. They are meant to be woven together in a garment of multicolored love. Neighbor love flourishes best when it's nurtured as part of an ecosystem of love. And it can't, in Jesus' teaching, exist on its own. And the shape of that neighbor love is embodied in Jesus. When we ask what does neighbor love look like, or what does love of neighbor look like, we look at Jesus. And we see Jesus as the ultimate exemplar embodiment of neighbor love, caring for others in the way he cares for himself. Have a look at the self-care of Jesus, the way he nurtures his inner world and his outer world. Yes, he gave an enormous amount of himself to the other, but he also paid attention to who he was in the world and the necessity of being nurtured in connection both with God, whom he knew as his intimate father, and also his own physical well-being and self. Yeah, he skipped meals. He fasted at times. But it wasn't this kind of ascetic focus to try and prove something. It was born out of and with an attentiveness to his own well-being. And the other thing about this neighbor love is it includes all. Everyone is in this circle, enemies, strangers, friends and family. We see Jesus engaging with all of them, sometimes in ways which feel like I did, we feel uncomfortable. But they're all born out of this place of love and attentiveness to others' well-being and flourishing. Some of you may remember in March 2025, there was an interview conducted with the Vice President of the US, J.D. Vance, and he articulated a vision or a version of Catholic doctrine called Ordo Amoris. I'm not pronouncing the Latin correctly, dear, so that's fine. But he basically said, you know, love is meant to be like this. You love your family, then you love your neighbor, and then you love your country, and then you love your fellow citizens in your own country. And after that, you can focus and prioritize the rest of the world. As if, you know, there's this hierarchy of places. If you have energy for those others, you give it. If you haven't, but there's a sense of kind of in this explanation, diminished responsibility. And there were some Catholics who, and indeed some Christians who agreed with Vance and defended his argument, but Pope Francis at the time wasn't one of them. And shortly after this interview, the Pope published a letter and he addressed the policies of the American administration's mass deportations and appeared in this letter to directly address the argument that Vance had advanced. And Francis said, Christian love is not a concentric expansion of interest that little by little extend to other persons and groups. The true love that must be promoted, he said, is love that builds a fraternity open to all without exception. And this is what Jesus embodies and demonstrates. This is this call to neighbor love where the circle is large enough to include all. Indeed, Richard Rohr suggests that authentic God experience or experience of the divine always expands your seeing and never constricts it. In God, you do not include less and less. You always see and love more. So is the love that we interpret this text one that constricts and confines and excludes? Or is it love which expands and includes and molds and frees? This is what Jesus is inviting us into here. I love some of the ways that we as a church together do some of this kind of stuff. I love our Nerve to Serve events, the way we get to cook meals for people or clean up streams that we all benefit from the health of in the city, or go and fix bikes that are going to go to people who can't afford them, or restore riverbanks. Some of these things that we do together. I love seeing the way people serve one another in this place, even around this event, with the tasks that are required to make it happen. I love going to Easter camp and seeing both the affection and the kindness, the rangatahi show towards one another, as well as, you know, the big investment that those who are going out there to either support by setting things up or to for our rangatahi, or being there in terms of being leaders and serving. Big shift from Jono and Mel this year too. So huge thanks to them for what they did. But this is neighbor love in action within our own community and out beyond the edges of our own community. Someone just came to church this morning and said, I can't stay. I've got to go because my neighbor's having an emergency. I need to go and be with my neighbor. They're at worship. They're at worship in another place. They're giving expression to the life of love within this ecosystem in a way that the moment calls for. That the moment calls for. Being responsive to the Spirit in that way. Neighbor love is about where we park our bikes and park our cars. It definitely is. We can do that in unloving ways. It's about how we are as a community and how we care for and look out for and stand with one another and respond to the moments where we need to adjust course and just be there, often feeling deeply inadequate, but being there for the other and bringing what we can. It's about cultivating the system and doing it together. Dorothy Day, in her book, The Reckless Way of Love, Notes on Following Jesus, says this, and I finish with this for those of you who are wondering when that will happen. We must lay one brick at a time, take one step at a time. We can be responsible only for the action of the present moment, but we can beg for an increase of love in our hearts that will vitalize and transform all of our individual actions, and know that God will take that and multiply that even as he multiplied the loaves and the fishes. God bless as you go out to love.